My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we are your delirious human hosts. On this week's episode, Humane's AI pin is back and better than ever. Google brings Gemini Nano to more devices. Microsoft is co-piloting all over the place. And the White House releases new AI guidelines for the federal government. All this and more coming up. And hello, how's it to our listeners in South Africa? Tristan, I just think that is the coolest thing that people are listening from South Africa.
How's it? Love it.
How's it? So Tristan, why don't you kick off our wonderful listeners in South Africa and the rest of us with some updates on the Humane AI pin.
Yes, our favorite wearable AI gadget that is shipping soon. Everyone's looking forward to spending $699 US and $24 a month in addition to your cell phone plan. But they've released a couple more videos recently, and they've really helped to explain more fully some of the features compared to previous videos. And there's a bit more energy, which I think people are appreciating too. So in the video they posted to YouTube recently, it's called What is AI Pin? They went over a number of features. They recapped some of the vision capabilities of the AI Pin, talked about nutrition again, and you may recall from last fall, having the AI pin look at a handful of almonds and being able to estimate the amount of protein in there, and it kind of got it wrong. So they're continuing to refine those capabilities there. They talked about some of the hardware, such as the charging pad, charging case, using AI pin to make a spreadsheet. They revisited the catch me up feature, which gives you a little recap of recent messages and upcoming appointments and things like that. They talked about Cosmos, which is COSMOS. So that's the operating system that pulls all this stuff together. As it's not really app-based, it's just this, you know, AI computing platform that is pulling in all your information from the cloud and using its multimodal capabilities, its camera and your voice and its laser projector. All Cosmos is what brings it all together. They mentioned calendar integration and the world of agents, being able to get the AI pin to go off and do little things for you, kind of like what the Rabbit R1, also coming soon, is promising to do. We'll see how well those work in real life. And it also alluded to improvements to the user interface, the software developer kit, and the like. Further to that, there was a little video that co-founder Bethany Bongiorno posted on Twitter, which got into some of the additional features, particularly around photos and videos. And in that, she showed a sample of the stabilization features. So as you may recall, the AI Pin has a 13-megapixel ultra-wide camera allowing photo capture You can use it to, you can enable the photo capture with the touchpad, your voice, and so on. And it features an AI photographer for burst shots, color correction, denoising, etc. And the video showed off the stabilization features, as mentioned, so you get smoother video recording. And the photo quality improvements are quite remarkable. She showed a sample from last fall and a current sample as well. The photos are uploaded in low-resolution mode over your LTE connection, so not 5G, LTE, to the Humane Dot Center, which is your little portal, your online portal. And that's part of what's included in your $24 a month subscription. Full resolution media is uploaded on Wi-Fi when you've got sufficient battery life. Plus, there's some basic Google Photos integration, which I know will make you happy, Tasia, and getting your images and videos in there. And additional syncing was alluded to for Google Contacts and Google Calendar support. And as we know, the camera is designed for multimodal search. It can identify objects in the environment, recognizing brands, providing shopping information, and so on. There was a little bit at the end of the original video we were talking about, where it was almost like a little Easter egg at the end, where they had the AI pin describe what the other co-founder, Imran Chowdhury, what he was wearing, and it was kind of cute. So things are coming along.
Yeah, he asked if it was like a good outfit.
Yeah.
As he stood in the mirror, you know, like fit check.
Exactly. And I think one of the nice things about some of the more more recent videos we're getting from Humane is they're actually more human, ironically enough, finally. Whereas some of the previous ones were just so chill. Now we're getting to see a little bit of their personality. Maybe some of the original ones, maybe it was nervousness or what have you, or maybe trying to be underhyped as opposed to overhyped. But now it just seemed a bit more relaxed and maybe a bit more confident. Things are finally, it's been almost a year since they first teased this at a TED Talk. And yeah, it's starting to come together. They're getting close to launch. I'm sure they're excited. And it's just going to get better and better. We'll see how many people want to pony up $700 plus almost $25 a month for the monthly fee, because that's, you know, on top of one's cell phone plan. And that's the thing, is they're not positioning this as an addition to, or sorry, as a in addition to your cell phone. They're pushing this as like a replacement. And so what a better deal if it's only $24 a month, right? So I think the jury's still out on that one. I think it's going to be a lot of the more affluent and the early adopters and whatnot playing with this. Not available in Canada, so
yeah. Completely opposite. It's a companion to your smart device, so that you don't have to pull it out of your pocket. Like, Bethany nailed it off the top. She had like the longest portion of the video. It seemingly was all in regular time when she's showcasing how recall and search and location information and AI recommendations and using AI to give you like an AI summary of your messages and notifications for the day. It was really, really good. So we'll put that link in the show notes for everyone just to see. But my response to Tristan when he sent me the video was, am I getting AI pin now? I mean, obviously I'm not going to spend the money and then also have a plan on top of it, but it's pretty interesting. Like, things got really, really real with it. So I still think it's that same argument you and I have been making, which is an additional device. And it's a real hard sell to get people to move to an additional device. But if this is just kind of the beginning for them, and maybe it will replace some people's smartphones at some point, I don't think it's quite there yet. I see it as a companion. But speaking of smartphones, Tristan, you know, as I do on our episodes, I must cover anything and all things of the Google. So Google is bringing Gemini Nano to Pixel 8 with their next feature drop. So here are all the deets that you need to know and all our Pixel users need to know. It's right now in developer preview, but you're going to have the ability to summarize in Recorder and Gboard Smart Reply. So Gboard Smart Reply is basically going to allow for higher quality smart replies that have what they're calling conversational awareness, and it should now be generated faster as well. So on the Pixel 8 Pro, this works with things like WhatsApp and Line, and is it Kakao Talk? That's another app.
In South Korea, yeah.
So Summarize can basically take a recording and then generate the most important bullet points for you, as you can imagine. Now, both the 8 and the 8 Pro are Tensor G3 devices, but the difference here is the RAM. So 8 has 8 gigabytes and the Pro has 12 gigabytes. So essentially, Google has found a way to run this LLM on less RAM, with, they say, without impacting the rest of the user experience. So Gemini Nano is coming to Pixel 8 very soon in the next feature drop, which should be Android 14, and I'm estimating that's usually in the June-ish timeframe, which is very exciting.
2 months after, I forgot to mention that the AI pin's supposed to come out in April. So we got that Google drop 2 months after the you get bored with your AI pin.
Once you've done spent the $700 and you're like, now what? This is what. But that's not all the Google news I have for you, Tristan, because why would it be? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be our show. Google named this show. I mean, so they've announced several new updates to Google Maps and search functions. And these are now aimed at assisting users with their travel plans, all thanks to AI. So users in more than 40 cities throughout the US and Canada are going to be able to access lists of suggested dining and visitation spots via Google Maps. These algorithm-generated suggestions comprise three main lists. So there's going to be a trending list, which is updated weekly, and that features places that are like experiencing a surge in popularity at the time. A top list of locations, and that's going to be known for their enduring popularity, and then a gems, which is supposed to highlight the lesser known but noteworthy destinations. There's a lot of changes coming. That was only one. The other one is that they're going to give curated recommendation lists from top sources, like things like, I think, your travel sources, Lonely Planet, New York Times, Open Table for reservations, and the like. And they're introducing enhanced customization features for creating personal lists. So what this means is that users can rearrange the order of places within their lists, and then they can link to relevant posts on their social media channels. So see how this is all getting more social now? Easy share via Google Maps, and you feeling it, Tristan? I don't know.
Next thing you know, the return of Google Plus.
Right? This is what I was like, I don't know. This is harkening back to like one... We should have one network, exactly. One social network.
Except this time it's powered by AI.
Right. So these lists they're saying are going to be really helpful for trip planning, keeping track of your favorite locations and more. Like, I've always created, I don't know if you've done this, but I've created and shared maps. And I'm probably not wording that properly in what it's called, but I've always, when I have like my favorite locations, like say the city of Vancouver, I've favorited a bunch of spots and locales and sightseeing, and I pin them on a map with different little emojis to signify whether it's, I'm such a loser.
It's adorable.
So extra, but like to signify, is it a sightseeing spot? Is it a restaurant? You know, stuff like that. Is it entertainment? And then I share that map via a link with friends and family that are going to Vancouver. So they're like, bang, look at this. Here's all the highlights, like Tejas Vancouver, you know? And I do that for other places. I have one for Florence, all this kind of stuff. So this to
like,
me feels
ma'am,
like...
this is a Wendy's?
Right. They're like, what's so special about this Wendy's? But this feels like to me of the next iteration of that. Basically, instead of secretly, you know, hiding your own little curated list, it's like, now we can have these lists that we can share and make public and push out on our other social channels and all the good things if you're following. But Tristan, some people are going to be upset with this next part, and I'm just going to say sorry in advance. Google is also going to be updating its design of Google Maps again. Mm-hmm. So they're saying it's going to have a new, cleaner home screen with fewer tabs and new pin colors that make it easier to find the places on the map. Here's the thing. I think it was the fall of 2023. They changed the UI. They changed the colors on Google Maps. Very slight. People are enraged, Tristan. The amount of comments I got on my YouTube channel about Google Maps changing, like the navigation blue is a little bit of a darker blue than it used to be. There's a couple other colors.
That's infuriating.
Yes. Some things are gray when they were a different color. The amount of comments I got I was shook. I was like, I don't know why they did it. So for all of you that were pissed about it the first time, there's more changes coming already now because it's a Google product. So every few months, they've got to make a little design change. I don't know what to tell you. So it's going to use AI to generate intelligent summaries of the locations in Google Maps, such as reviews, user uploaded photos, and catch this, it's going to be using AI to enhance photos of food with details, including the specific name of the dish. So this could be really good if it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But if it starts enhancing the photos to look better than the food actually is, I'm going to have an issue with that. And if it's not naming the dish properly, that's also going to create a big problem. So I'm assuming this is Google we're talking about. They probably have something in place where if you're the owner of the restaurant, you can go in and properly title the name of the dish. I'm sure. I don't know, but I would bet my hat on it. Is that a saying?
Sure.
Sure. That's a saying. So lots of changes coming to Google Maps. And again, right now, this is going to be rolling out in Canada and the US. As soon as I have these features, I'll make a video for you, Tristan. Don't have it quite yet. But then it will eventually roll to other countries as they do.
And on the photos of your food, you can be like, have little arrows. Poison. Tasty fish. Because there's, with blowfish, a lot of it's poison, but some part it's tasty.
This is true. So I don't know. We'll have to see how. I'm sure there's going to be some mistakes off the top with it. And then you can imagine people are going to be in an uproar over that. They misnamed this dish. Ah. But it's kind of exciting. I mean, to see where it goes. Part of me is excited and part of me gets like, I say this all the time, especially with Google products, like what they're trying to do with YouTube. You don't have to be all things to all people. So if you're doing the one thing really, really well. Now, some of these updates that Google Maps have rolled in the last few years are really, really handy, to be fair. Like if I'm already in Maps, it's handy for me to now be able to make my restaurant reservations right in Google Maps because I'm already there, especially if I'm traveling and I'm like, baby, and I could just push through right from there to do it as opposed to having to go to a third party. So I get some of these things from that aspect, but I hope it just doesn't get too convoluted and too much of like a social share and I want to be important and look at the food I'm eating. You know, like I hope it doesn't become that. I still want like good reviews because I rely on Google reviews a lot for things. So we'll see. We're not going to know till it's rolled out to more people and we can start giving the public feedback, if you will.
Yeah, like the social stuff aside, a lot of this is where Google really shines in terms of the aggregation of data. And this is honestly something that's been missing from a lot of the apps and services that I've tried over decades. I remember it was like 20 years ago, there was a local website here in Vancouver. It was mybc.com. It eventually became MyTelus. It was run by one of the local telecom providers. And they had a really cool feature on there where you went into a map and you said, oh, I'm going to see a movie. Show me nearby restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been because there's so many different data sources now, like you said, like, oh, you know, there's OpenTable and there's Yelp and there's still like Foursquare and Swarm are still a thing sort of. And of course there's, you know, Google itself with maps and the reviews that people leave on there and TripAdvisor. So to have everything kind of like sucked into one place, and I want to be able to go on a map and say, okay, I'm going to be doing something here, seeing a show, a concert, whatever, movie. I want to grab a bite beforehand or afterwards. Just show me what's nearby and show me the best things in this category. And just have, and the AI, like I would, even better if you can just ask it. Because a lot of times now you ask, you know, one of the Maps apps and it'll tell you, you ask for something and it'll tell you something that's like not even close. It's like, come on, or it's the wrong category. So I am hopeful, cautiously optimistic that Google will be able to get this right, and then others will follow suit, Apple. So, because Apple Maps is a lot better than it used to be, but it's some of those recommendations are still not so hot.
And Google does do a pretty good job right now with some recommendation cards and such. So that's why I'm like curious to see how this plays out exactly in a helpful way and not a muddled form.
I don't want to know what's new and hot because that's where everyone's going to be. Give me the hidden gems.
Exactly. But then like once those hidden gems get popular, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing.
Keep moving on.
But I feel the exact same.
All right. Speaking of moving on, how about a hack?
Dun, dun, dun.
So just this week, reported thousands of servers hacked in an ongoing attack targeting the Ray AI framework. So these servers, these thousands of servers, include those used by OpenAI, Uber, and Amazon. And they've been hacked due to a vulnerability in Ray. Well, what is Ray, you might ask? It is an open source computing framework that allows AI applications to run efficiently on multiple computers. So these ongoing attacks, which apparently have been active for at least 7 months, have compromised AI models, network credentials, and installed cryptocurrency miners and reverse shells on the affected servers. So that's cool. So, you know, if you're wondering why maybe ChatGPT is taking a little long to respond, maybe because it's trying to, you know, mine some crypto on the side. What is even happening? So attackers have gained control over AI production workloads, allowing them to tamper with models during training. Oh, that's reassuring. Nazi people of color, maybe that's how we got those, and which could corrupt the model's integrity. Fantastic. So security firm Oligo has identified the attacks and provided indicators for users to check for compromises. AnyScale, the developer of Ray, has been criticized for not addressing the vulnerability, but plans to introduce authentication in a future update. Great news. So it was just a matter of time, Tasia. We haven't really been talking so much about security, like from an infrastructure point of view, when it comes to AI. Because you just sort of assume, well, all these big data centers, those run by Google and Microsoft and others, you think they got their stuff locked down. But when there's a vulnerability in the actual, in one of the software tools, well, that's a different story altogether. So I suspect this is just the first high-profile attacks that are going to come across our desks. And again, another reason to be very cautious about what you input into your friendly neighborhood chatbot of choice, because you never know how some of that could be leaked out into not just those who own the platform, but those who may have somehow gotten access to the platform and are messing around in there and, you know, mining crypto.
Glad this was happening for 7 months, though, already, yeah, before we were told. Love it's it. Perfect. It's perfect, you know. It wasn't too long before they told us, heads up.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Well, maybe Uncle Joe's going to help us out, Tasia.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of months, it's been about 5 months since President Joe Biden had signed that executive order to address how rapidly all these advancements are happening in AI. I don't know if you remember that. It's already been 5 months. Well, the White House is now implementing an executive order policy that aims to regulate the federal government's use of AI. So Vice President Kamala Harris announced 3 binding requirements under the new Office of Management OMB, Office of Management and Budget. So this is their new policy. First, agencies need to ensure that any tools they use, quote, do not endanger the rights and safety of the American people, end quote. Pretty vague. So they have until December 1st to make sure that they have in place concrete safeguards and to make sure that the AI systems that they're employing don't impact our safety or our rights. Otherwise, the agency is going to have to stop using an AI product unless its leaders can justify that scrapping the system would have an unacceptable impact or on critical operations. So per this policy, an AI system is deemed to impact safety if it is, quote, used or expected to be used in real-world conditions to control or significantly influence the outcomes of certain activities and decisions. So those include things like maintaining election integrity and voting infrastructure, controlling critical safety functions. Seriously. So controlling critical safety infrastructure and functions of things like our water systems, emergency services, electrical grids. Oh, God. Don't have the electrical grid go down. Autonomous vehicles, and even things like operating the physical movements of robots, like in a workplace or school or housing, in transport, in medical fields, in a law enforcement setting. So this is really, really, as you know, as wide reaching as I think they could make it. Unless they have appropriate safeguards in place or can otherwise justify their use, agencies are also going to have to ditch AI systems that infringe on the rights of Americans. Purposes that the policy presumes to impact rights defines include predictive policing, social media monitoring for law enforcement, detecting plagiarism in schools, blocking or limiting protected speech, detecting or measuring human emotions and thoughts, pre-employment screening, which is something I never really thought of, and replacing a person's likeness or voice without express consent. Oh, yeah. I worry about that all the time. Now, that's just the first requirement. Remember, the second requirement is going to force agencies to be transparent about the AI systems that they are using. So they're going to need to publish government-owned AI code, models, and data, as long as doing so won't harm the public or the government operation, obviously. So if the agency can't disclose specific AI use cases for sensitivity reasons, they're still going to have to report metrics. Just as an FYI. And lastly, the third thing is federal agencies will need to have internal oversight of their AI use. That includes each department appointing a chief AI officer. And that chief AI officer is going to oversee all of an agency's use of AI. Seems like a very big job. So the vice president also added that quote, prominent figures from the public and private sectors. So people like civil rights leaders, computer scientists, and the like, they have helped shape this policy along with scholars and business leaders. So there's a lot to unpack in there, Tristan, but it starts very broad reaching. They try to get a little niche.
Mm-hmm. So I think there's a couple of things to comment on here. And one is that when we were speaking about regulation in the fall, a lot of the concern was regarding government regulation of AI development and what companies could, you know, put out there. And that's, I think, still to come to a certain extent. But fear not, this, what we're talking about here is just for use by federal government agencies. So there's a lot of rules for the bureaucracy. And as part of that, they're adding more bureaucracy because now we got to have your chief officer, AI officers for all these agencies. You're going to have all the staff who are vetting the tools, which is all good. But just so we're clear, this isn't going to impact the ability of private companies to innovate and do what they're doing with their frontier models, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it may impact the ability of said private companies to sell to the government because they may have more hoops to jump through to demonstrate that their tools are secure and won't, you know, violate rights, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, privacy considerations are in place. So we're just everyone's clear. This is federal government agencies only for now. Private sector can still do what it's doing, but eventually, the other shoe is going to drop when it comes to the private sector as well. But there are still implications, like I said, if you're going to be selling into the government. But you know, the good news is, hooray, more bureaucracy. So, you know, when the next government shutdown comes, there'll be more people like out of work for a little while until they, you know, everyone can kiss and make up.
We need the guardrails, Tristan. Mm-hmm. You love to hate them, but we need them. All right, what the heck is going on with Microsoft Copilot? Ooh.
Well, it never stops. All these guys, I mean, this is the beauty of competition. We've got Google and we've got OpenAI and you know, with their buddies at Microsoft. We've got Amazon, we've got Apple, we've got Anthropic, and Meta. Everyone's doing what they can, but so much of the heat has been around local processing in the last few months. Everyone's talking about AI PCs. You know, Apple's talking about how, you know, the M3 MacBook Air is the best AI personal computer, et cetera, et cetera. So part of its marketing spin, part of it has to do with the actual hardware that they are building into machines. So Intel and Microsoft are discussing plans to run Copilot locally on PCs instead of in the cloud. So the upcoming quote-unquote AI PC will include hardware components not commonly found in current Windows systems, such as Neural Processing Unit, NPUs, which we've talked about before, and a Copilot key for keyboards. I believe we've seen that on at least one model today so far. So it sounds like this is like a spec or a reference platform that Microsoft and Intel are trying to come up with, kind of like we had with Ultrabooks back in the day, you know, when they saw the MacBook Air come out. It's like, Windows PC should do something like that too. Here's some guidelines. So Microsoft and Intel aim to enable AI PCs to run more elements of Copilot locally, reducing lag and enhancing privacy by not sending data for server-side processing. Microsoft will require NPUs, these neural processing units, in next-generation AI PCs to achieve at least 40 trillion operations per second, or TOPS. We were talking about flops previously. Well, this is TOPS. With companies like Intel, AMD, and Qualcomm working on chips that meet or exceed this threshold. Now, Intel's upcoming Lunar Lake chips, which are supposed to be coming out next year, 2025, will triple its current NPU speeds. So lots of action happening in this space. We talked about NVIDIA recently and all what they're doing, Apple, what they're doing. But speaking of Apple, their M3 currently leads with 18 TOPS. So of like regular PC makers, the Apple M3 is in the lead at 18 TOPS. But by next year, you know, we're hoping to see ones that are at 40 TOPS, and that's what Microsoft is requiring to qualify as an AI PC. So, you know, Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, they're all like racing to get their 40 TOPS capable chips in there. The Qualcomm's Snapdragon X Elite might first meet the 40 TOPS requirement for Copilot. And Intel, by the way, has launched an AI PC developer program and is offering an AI PC development kit with Asus to encourage the creation of AI features and apps, despite potential software and hardware compatibility issues with the ARM version of Windows. That's still a thing. We still have that dichotomy between Windows for Intel, for the x86 heritage, and Windows for ARM. So you might see a little bit of glitchiness between those two versions and this whole NPU introduction as well. But so that's what's going on the kind of the hardware side. And when it comes to the user-facing side, at least in the enterprise, you may be familiar with Azure, which is their cloud computing platform, which hosts all of Microsoft's Copilot AI goodness. And of course, that of OpenAI as well. Well, Microsoft has introduced new safety tools in Azure AI Studio to prevent malicious prompt attacks and hallucinations in AI applications. So you may recall, hallucinations is the popular term for when these LLMs, these chatbots, just seem to kind of make stuff up. They don't know. It's like, we'll just make it up. They're just the ultimate BSers. The problem is they sound so confident and convincing, it's easy to be hoodwinked, and you just pass stuff off as being true. That's why you fact check, right? So designed for Azure customers without deep expertise, these tools can detect vulnerabilities, monitor for hallucinations, and block malicious prompts in real time. And there are three main tools. So I'm going to just give you a quick rundown on each of the tools. So one is prompt shields. The other is groundedness detection. And the third is safety evaluations. And there'll be additional tools for directing safe outputs and tracking prompts coming soon. So prompt shields, you can think of a prompt shield as a security guard for AI applications. It protects the AI from two types of attack, direct attacks and indirect attacks. So direct attacks are when someone is trying to make the AI do something it's not supposed to do. We've seen that over and over again, right? People trying to like break the AIs. Indirect attacks are more sneaky. They happen when the AI processes information that wasn't directly written by the developer or the user. So, for example, if an attacker sends an email with hidden instructions to an AI-powered email assistant, the assistant might unknowingly follow these instructions. So, and prompt shields will help prevent these kinds of attacks. So there was a story recently, we decided not to cover it this week, but it's how inserting ASCII art, so that's images created by all sorts of like characters and punctuation and whatnot, how if you, that is somehow injected into LLMs, it can break them and they will spill all sorts of stuff that they might not have otherwise. So these are the kind of sneaky attacks that they're talking about, these almost quasi code injection type things. So which could, you know, make problems for automated AI assistants, like you said, these email processors. Then so that is the prompt shields. Groundedness detection is like a fact checker for the AI. So sometimes AIs can generate outputs that sound plausible, like you're talking, but are not supported by the facts. It may sound like some politicians, you know. So this is known, as we mentioned, as hallucination, or also known as ungroundedness. So groundedness detection helps identify when the AI is making things up. It's especially useful in applications that need to provide accurate summaries or answers, like a Q&A assistant. And I think we saw an example a few months ago, it was at Air Canada, and someone was asking about their bereavement policy and deals on tickets for that, and it just kind of made up an answer. So that's a really important thing. So we've heard about training an AI, training an LLM, and that is like the large, you know, world of how to understand language and basic facts about the world. And groundedness is when you're trying to get it familiar with specific domains and data sets. So company policies, for example. So that's how you can ground an AI. So it knows the language and it knows general things about the world, but then, okay, now you're supposed to be an expert in this stuff that you're grounded in. And if the questions that are being asked that touch on these topics and you don't know, don't make it up. Just say you don't know and refer people to customer service or, you know, some other sort of support or expertise. Let's see. The last is safety evaluations. And these are like safety inspectors for AI applications. And they check the AI's output for content and security risks. So those risks could include things like generating harmful content, like hate speech or violent materials, or being susceptible to jailbreak attacks, where the AI is manipulated to do something outside its intended purpose. So we saw that with Dan or Do Anything Now, which was a type of jailbreak people were doing on ChatGPT-3 not long after it came out to try and get it to ignore the rules that it was following. So The safety evaluations can also help developers understand how well their safety measures are working. And then Microsoft's offering customized controls for all these things, allowing Azure customers control over the AI outputs, including filtering some of the types of content that it gets out there. So how much hate speech do you want to allow? Just a little or a lot? Or maybe none at all, for example. So that's a couple of angles that Microsoft is working right now. The hardware side with Intel and the AI PCs and what are the requirements for that. And then also on the enterprise side for Azure, really buttoning things up from a security standpoint to make sure the AIs don't go off the rails more than necessary.
Before we close, we got to say to everybody, what do I always say about LLMs? Where it's everybody's favorite little sociopath. That's why we tell you, fact check. Because sometimes she'd be saying some things really confidently that aren't true. And that's okay, because there's creativity in that. We need a skosh of it, okay? But not in a negative manner. See, Tristan, what I'm doing with my hands, we need guardrails. That's but not too tight. Not too tight of guardrails. And with that, can you believe we've done it again?
We've nailed another one. It was the shortest in a while.
We've nailed another one, Tristan. I'd like to thank you all for listening to another episode of AI Name This Show. If you enjoyed this episode, maybe you just enjoy us and you didn't care for the episode. I don't care. Subscribe. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. We'd love to hear it.
And feedback at AI Name This Show. You know, send us an email. We appreciate all your emails. And sometimes when we reply, they don't make it through because we need to do some stuff on our DNS. So if we haven't been ignoring you. If you haven't gotten a reply, it's just our emails are going into the void sometimes. So we're working on that. Maybe we'll get AI
to help. We understand tech. Thank you so much for listening to AI Named This Show.
AI and goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.